2. A combination of circumstances had arisen which Mr. von Lempke was quite unable to deal with. In the very district where Pyotr Stepanovich had been having a festive time, a sub-lieutenant had been called up to be censured by his immediate superior, and the reproof was given in the presence of the whole company. The sub-lieutenant was a young man fresh from Petersburg, always silent and morose, of dignified appearance, though small, stout and rosy-cheeked. He resented the reprimand, and suddenly, with a startling shriek that astonished the whole company, he charged at his superior officer with his head bent down like a wild beast's, struck him and bit him on the shoulder with all his might. They had difficulty in getting him off. There was no doubt that he had gone out of his mind. Anyway, it became known that of late he had been observed performing incredibly strange actions. He had, for instance, flung 2 icons belonging to his landlady out of his lodgings and smashed up one of them with an axe. In his own room he had, on 3 stands resembling lecterns, laid out the works of Vogt, Molschott and Buchner, and before each lectern he used to burn a church wax candle. From the number of books found in his rooms it could be gathered that he was a well-read man. If he had had 50,000 francs, he would perhaps have sailed to the island of Marquesas, like the cadet to whom Herzen alludes with such sprightly humour in one of his writings. When he was seized, whole bundles of the most desperate manifestos were found in his pockets and his lodgings. Manifestos are a trivial matter, too, and, to my thinking, not worth troubling about. We have seen plenty of them. Besides, they were not new manifestos. They were, as it was said later, just the same as had been circulated in the ex-province, and Liputin, who had travelled in that district and the neighbouring province 6 weeks previously, declared that he had seen exactly the same leaflets there then. But what struck Andrei Antonovich most was that the overseer of Spigulin's factory had brought the police just at the same time 2 or 3 packets of exactly the same leaflets as had been found on the lieutenant. The bundles, which had been dropped in the factory at night, had not been opened, and none of the factory hands had had time to read one of them. The incident was a trivial one, but it set Andrei Antonovich pondering deeply. The position presented itself to him in an unpleasantly complicated light. In this factory, the famous Spigulin scandal was just then brewing, which made so much talk among us, and got into the Petersburg and Moscow papers, with all sorts of variations. 3 weeks previously, one of the hands had fallen ill and died of Asiatic cholera. Then several others were stricken down. The whole town was in a panic, for the cholera was coming nearer and nearer, and had reached the neighbouring province. I may observe that satisfactory sanitary measures had been, so far as possible, taken to meet the unexpected guest, but the factory belonging to the Spigulins, who were millionaires and well-connected people, had somehow been overlooked. And there was a sudden outcry from everyone that this factory was the hotbed of infection, that the factory itself, and even the quarters inhabited by the workpeople, were so inveterately filthy that even if cholera had not been in the neighbourhood, there might well have been an outbreak there. Steps were immediately taken, of course, and Andrei Antonovich vigorously insisted on their being carried out without delay within 3 weeks. The factory was cleansed, but the Spigulins, for some unknown reason, closed it. One of the Spigulin brothers always lived in Petersburg, and the other went away to Moscow when the order was given for cleansing the factory. The overseer proceeded to pay off the workpeople and, as it appeared, cheated them shamelessly. The hands began to complain among themselves, asking to be paid fairly, and foolishly went to the police, though without much disturbance, for they were not so very much excited. It was just at this moment that the manifestos were brought to Andrei Antonovich by the overseer. Pyotr Stepanovich popped into the study unannounced, like an intimate friend and one of the family. Besides, he had a message from Yulia Mikhailovna. Seeing him, Lempke frowned grimly and stood still at the table without welcoming him. Till that moment he had been pacing up and down the study and had been discussing something tête-à-tête with his clerk, Blum, a very clumsy and surly German whom he had brought with him from Petersburg, in spite of the violent opposition of Yulia Mihailovna. On Pyotr Stepanovich's entrance, the clerk had moved to the door, but had not gone out. Pyotr Stepanovich even fancied that he exchanged significant glances with his chief. "Aha! I've caught you at last, you secretive monarch of the town," Pyotr Stepanovich cried out laughing, and laid his hand over the manifesto on the table. "This increases your collection, eh?" Andrei Antonovich flushed crimson. His face seemed to twitch.
"Leave off! Leave off at once!" he cried, trembling with rage. "And don't you dare, sir!"
"What's the matter with you? You seem to be angry."
"Allow me to inform you, sir, that I've no intention of putting up with your sans-faisant henceforward, and I beg you to remember—"
"Why, damn it all, he is in earnest."
"Hold your tongue! Hold your tongue!"
Von Lempke stamped on the carpet.
"And don't dare!"
God knows what it might have come to. Alas, there was one circumstance involved in the matter of which neither Pyotr Stepanovich nor even Yulia Mihailovna herself had any idea. The luckless Andrei Antonovich had been so greatly upset during the last few days that he had begun to be secretly jealous of his wife and Pyotr Stepanovich. In solitude, especially at night, he spent some very disagreeable moments.
"Well, I imagine that if a man reads you his novel 2 days running till after midnight and wants to hear your opinion of it, he has of his own act discarded official relations anyway. Yulia Mihailovna treats me as a friend. There's no making you out,"
Pyotr Stepanovich brought out, with a certain dignity indeed.
"Here's your novel, by the way."
He laid on the table a large, heavy manuscript rolled in blue paper. Lempke turned red and looked embarrassed.
"Where did you find it?" he asked discreetly, with a rush of joy which he was unable to suppress, though he did his utmost to conceal it.
"Only fancy, done up like this. It rolled under the chest of drawers. I must have thrown it down carelessly on the chest when I went out. It was only found the day before yesterday when the floor was scrubbed. You did set me a task, though."
Lempke dropped his eyes sternly.
"I haven't slept for the last 2 nights, thanks to you. It was found the day before yesterday, but I kept it and have been reading it ever since. I've no time in the day, so I've read it at night. Well, I don't like it. It's not my way of looking at things, but that's no matter. I've never set up for being a critic, but I couldn't tear myself away from it, my dear man, though I didn't like it. The fourth and fifth chapters are—they really are. Damn it all, they are beyond words. And what a lot of humour you've packed into it. It made me laugh. How you can make fun of things sans que cela paraisse. As for the 9th and 10th chapters, it's all about love. That's not my line, but it's effective, though. I was nearly blubbering over Egrenev's letter, though you've shown him up so cleverly. You know, it's touching, though at the same time you want to show the false side of him, as it were, don't you? Have I guessed right? But I could simply beat you for the ending. For what are you setting up? Why the same old idol of domestic happiness, begetting children and making money? They were married and lived happy ever afterwards. Come, it's too much. You will enchant your readers, for even I couldn't put the book down, but that makes it all the worse. The reading public is as stupid as ever, but it's the duty of sensible people to wake them up, while you— But that's enough. Goodbye. Don't be cross another time. I came in to you because I had a couple of words to say to you, but you are so unaccountable."
Andrei Antonovich, meantime, took his novel and locked it up in an oak bookcase, seizing the opportunity to wink at Blum to disappear. The latter withdrew with a long, mournful face.
"I am not unaccountable. I am simply nothing but annoyances," he muttered, frowning but without anger, and sitting down to the table. "Sit down and say what you have to say. It's a long time since I've seen you, Pyotr Stepanovich. Only don't burst upon me in the future with such manners. Sometimes when one has business, it's—"
"My manners are always the same.
I know, and I believe that you mean nothing by it, but sometimes one is worried. Sit down."
Pyotr Stepanovich immediately lolled back on the sofa and drew his legs under him.